Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Your Vibes Podcast. Everybody's got a vibe and a story to tell. Here's this one. I hope you enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Sassy Pop Boutique. Sassy Pop is a women's clothing and accessory boutique located inside Mulberry Mill in Dixon, Tennessee. Sassy Pop's fashion professionals help their clients find the right style and fit for all body types and sizes. Whether you are an extra extra small or a 3XL, Sassy Pop Boutique will have you looking your best for all four seasons. Check them out on Facebook at Sassy Pop Boutique and on Instagram at Sassy Pop Boutique Dixon. Or browse their website for 24-hour shopping and shipping anywhere in the United States at sassypopboutique.com. What's up, everybody? We're back here with another episode of Your Vibes Podcast. I appreciate you tuning in once again. I've got a good man in here today. Part of the legal process, he keeps the wheels turning here in Dixon, and I guess was born in White Bluff and has come back and started his own practice. And it is election season this year around, so I'm getting a lot of campaign videos and everything out as well too. And wanted to have him in just to kind of speak his piece and tell us what he loves about Dixon. So welcome, Leonard. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for coming in, and sure do appreciate it. Cool. So did you have a good weekend, Leonard?
I did. I enjoyed Old Timers Day. Usually it's around my birthday, but this year a little change up. But yeah, it was a good weekend.
Yeah, I think I was glad that they moved it to when they did. I think they had some trouble with some rain and some weather issues kind of prior before. So I think pushing it back was good. And I think there was a pretty good turnout. You know, I don't know if it was as big as the Spring Street Festival, but I think it was a pretty good turnout. And first year they closed North Main down, so I think that turned out pretty well. I know South Main was pretty well packed, and as it typically is, Dan and Sharon know how to throw a party, don't they?
They do, and it's amazing, you know, on the course of my lifetime, what's happened in downtown Dixon. I can remember as a kid, you know, they'd have advertisements in the Dixon Herald about having dove shoots downtown.
And that's a real thing, isn't it?
It was. My parents would never let me go, but you know, they had those when I was a kid, and now to see Dixon, downtown Dixon, it's just amazing what's happened in the last few years.
And there's still like bullet dents and stuff in the buildings, and too, aren't there, from the pigeon shoots?
I don't know. I've never seen that.
I keep thinking we need to bring that back. I think that would just add a little of excitement on Main Street. I don't know how anybody would take it, but and I don't see too many pigeons flying around anymore either, but. Cool. All right. Well, just typical fashion of the show. We can kind of just get started with you and your start, and maybe work into why you got into law practice, and we can kind of go from there.
Okay. I was raised in White Bluff on Main Street. and I live there now in the same house that my grandfather built back in the 1950s, where my mother was raised, where I was raised, and where we're raising our daughter, Addison. I attended school K through 12 in Dixon County High Schools, or Dixon County Schools, graduated from Dixon County High School, the last class of the unified Dixon County High School in 2002. Mm. After that, I went to Austin Peay State University on a music scholarship and a Good Lark Educational Foundation scholarship.
What is that?
Good Lark Educational Foundation.
Is that kind of like the lottery thing, or is it...
No, I was pre-lottery, so okay. I believe what that is the Jackson Foundation that owned Good Lark Hospital. Once they sold that, they used that money to form a scholarship and support folks in Dixon County going to college. And so those two things paved the way or got me to college. Okay. Without the financial support of Austin Peay's music program and the Good Lark Educational Foundation, I would not have had the opportunity to go to college. So
shout out to Dixon on that one. That's awesome.
Yes, sir.
Cool.
And so I started as a music major, changed a lot along the way, came back home and spent some time working. You know, I worked a lot of different jobs, worked in the restaurant industry. I worked construction with my family, worked at Tensco in Dixon for a while. But ultimately, I was able to graduate with a criminal justice degree from Austin Peay in 2008.
Okay. Was that kind of in the, I guess you, so you did construction prior, so I guess the law practice wasn't really necessarily in the family then, was it?
No, no, my grandparents, you know, both quit school in elementary school to work on farms. My mother's a graduate of Dixon County High School. My stepdad's a graduate of Dixon County High School. My stepfather raised me. My grandfather was instrumental in my life, and that's one of the reasons at one point I did come home from school was to spend time with him as he got ill in his later in life. And no, there wasn't any law practice in my family or really any post-secondary education. You know, but I was always encouraged, even from a young child, to work hard, do well in school, and that would help me later in life and hopefully pave the way for me to go to college, in which it did.
Cool.
And so.
So any you know what was it that kind of sparked the criminal justice degree? Was it, you know, just kind of while you're at it, or was there you know, some inspiration, something happened in your life that you felt like you may, you know, want to pursue this for the rest of your life?
Sure. So it was a criminal justice degree with a concentration in Homeland Security. So really what sparked that was 9/11. You know, I was a senior in high school when that happened. That was always something that you know, I thought about quite a bit over the years.
It affected a lot of people.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. So that's what steered me in that direction. And I wanted to be a police officer. I tried to get a job being a police officer for years. You know, in that probably 2005, 2006, time frame, I applied to Dixon Police Department, Dixon Sheriff's Office. I interviewed with the civil service of Dixon Sheriff's Office. I remember back then telling them I was part of the college Republicans at Austin Peay, and they said they wouldn't hold that against me. But that tells you kind of the political makeup in Dixon County back then versus the political makeup of Dixon County now.
Absolutely, yeah. It has, you know, and the Democrats back in the day, you know, aren't necessarily the Democrats that are today, it seems like. You know, I know my Uncle David ran on the Democrat car, but he was probably one of the most conservative Democrats I've ever met. You know, it was just one of those kind of party line things that sometimes people feel like they need to choose a side, but, you know, I think it's, you know, doing right by the people is the main thing on that one.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. So police department didn't kind of go the route that you expected it to, and, you know, what kind of steps were you taking after that?
So in 2006, I was hired by the Postal Service. And so I worked at the Postal Service from 2006 to January of 2011. And so the Postal Service shifted my focus in life kind of from survival or figuring out how I was going to make things happen to what could I do with my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it took a lot of that burden off of how I was going to survive or how I was going to pay bills or how, you know, all those type of things. And I knew my future was secure once I got that job with the Postal Service. So, you know, and so I started there in spring of 2006. And that's, you know, when I finished Austin Peay while I was working at the Postal Service. And then I worked a year full time. Well, I was working full time that entire time, but I spent a year just working. And then in spring of 2009, I decided to apply to law school. And it had been one of those things that had kind of been in my head. But I think without the Postal Service, I would never have made that leap or had the confidence to try to make that happen.
What were you doing over there again?
With the Postal Service? I delivered mail. I was a letter carrier in Nashville. I did that for about a year, and I was detailed as a supervisor doing delivery operations, first at Jerry Baxter in North Nashville, then at Arcade, downtown Nashville, and then Green Hills. Arcade, then Jerry Baxter, and then Green Hills.
Okay.
And I worked at Green Hills until the time that I transferred to San Antonio after being accepted to law school.
Okay. So you kind of got to start working in the governmental systems and started kind of learning your way that way and realizing that there's, you know, a career path out there that, you know, may interest you down the road.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely.
So you go off to law school, and what was that like? You know, I mean, you see all the movies and everything of,
the court scenes and all that as well too. So were you kind of keeping that in the back of your mind too? You know, that's going to be me one day kind of thing, or?
So when I went to law school, that's really kind of what how I thought courts were. I'd never actually been to a courthouse. and so I went to law school. I was still working at the Postal Service at that time. And so the first year and a half, I worked full-time at the Postal Service and went to law school at night. So my day would start about 5:30 or 6 o'clock. I'd work an 8-hour shift. I'd spend 3 or 4 hours studying in the afternoon, go to class for 3 hours at night, sleep about 6 hours, and do it all over again.
Wow.
And so,
that's a grind.
So I did that for the first year and a half, and then I resigned from the Postal Service to finish law school full time. But that was a challenge. You know, that was one of those decisions in life where I took the security that I had gotten by getting that job, and you just have to make that leap of faith that, look, I know I'm making the right decision. I know this is what I need to do with my life, and lay it all on the line, and you make it happen.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and once I wasn't working or once I stopped working, I spent a lot of time at the courthouse. San Antonio is a big city. I went to St. Mary's University in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
It's a big city, and so there are jury trials almost every day. So I started, I would just get up and go to the courthouse in the mornings, and I would just ask around who was going to have a trial, or I would wait outside what they call the central jury room and watch them when they take a panel to a courtroom and just watch. And I watched dozens and dozens of trials in San Antonio.
Wow.
Then I interned at the DA's office in San Antonio, and I did that for 4 or 5 months in 2011. That's when I made my mind up that probably what the majority of what I do would be criminal law.
Okay. Would you just see some cases that, you know, maybe really touched your heart or piqued your interest the most?
I did. I saw some cases and I felt like it was the place to make the biggest impact. And so at that point, I decided I wanted to be a prosecutor. So I interned at the DA's office in Bexar County in San Antonio. And then I came back to Tennessee that summer and interned at our district attorney's office.
Who was the DA at that point?
At that point, Dan Allsbrooks was the DA.
Okay.
And my supervisors and an intern were Ray Crouch, who's now our DA, and Kenneth Atkins, who was the DA before Dan Allsbrooks. And so I had two great supervisors that taught me a lot. It was just a very short period of time, about 3 months. But I learned a tremendous amount during that time. And then when I went back to San Antonio for my last year of law school, my entire focus at that point had shifted towards trial advocacy, and preparing myself to work in courtrooms when I got out of law school. So I did the criminal justice clinic, which I was able to actually try a DUI case while I was still in law school.
Oh, wow.
Under the supervision of my professor.
That one turned out okay. Those are pretty tough sometimes.
It did. It turned out in a hung jury.
Okay.
And so, you know, sometimes that's a good result.
Sure.
In a defense case. And I worked on a capital murder case with two great attorneys in San Antonio, Mark Stevens and Mario Del Prado. They're two great attorneys of totally different backgrounds. Mark had been a career defense attorney, and Mario had been a prosecutor and
had
only done defense work for a few years. And so I got to work with those guys pretty closely. I didn't do any courtroom work. You know, I kind of helped in the background and then observed, but, that was a really great experience. So.
Wow. So, you get your feet about you, get your feet wet. I appreciate the hustle too. Just going, you know, a lot of people, you know, they want something, but they don't necessarily want it bad enough, you know, and then having you hang around the courthouse and then interning, you know, just right off the bat with that, and especially under some great supervision too. I mean, that's good respect for that. A lot of, You know, and I'm sure, just like in the insurance world, you can only learn so much from the books and the tests and all that stuff, but it's really getting your hands, lack of a better description, your hands dirty, and getting involved with the entire situation and getting, under the supervision of those who have been there before, really going to kind of make the man out of you on that one.
You know, and that's one thing that the medical profession does really well and the legal profession doesn't. You know, you can graduate from law school, and never have been to a courtroom, never seen anything, and go out and, start taking cases as soon as you get your license. And so, that's one thing the medical field does a much better job of making sure you have plenty of OJT.
A lot of your rotations and everything, yeah. Right. So did you have to start out pro bono for some things right off the bat, or...?
Well, so I graduated. I got up the next morning in a U-Haul truck and came back to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I graduated, I was on the way back. And the reason for that is bar prep started Monday. So I graduated on Saturday, moved on Sunday, and started bar prep on Monday.
Okay.
And so that summer, you study for the bar and all that. And then I was offered a job with Baker Law Group with Olin Baker in Charlotte. And I started that in August. And so for the first 3 months, I was what I call a learner's permit. I had to be supervised by an attorney. I didn't have a license. And so I had to be supervised. And so, but I did kind of what I had done at the DA's office. I went to General Sessions Court. I would work up cases there. Mr. Baker would supervise me, make sure I didn't do anything wrong. And then once I got licensed in October, then, I was ready to hit the ground running.
Wow.
And I felt confident at that point that I had done everything to prepare myself to be ready to go.
So was having the experience and studying for the bar at the same time, I mean, did that help pretty significantly there? I mean, was there a lot of correlation in that and you could kind of tie some things together?
Maybe some. I mean, the bar exam is really broad.
Yeah.
So you got to know a little bit about a lot.
Yeah.
And so it's really broad. But what it tests are your analytical skills to make sure that you're able to look at a problem, identify the issue, frame a solution, and then work through it.
Okay.
So that's what it's designed for, is to look at your analytical skills.
Okay.
And that's really what law school is designed to do. They teach with a Socratic method. It's very different. They don't teach you kind of what to do in a situation. They train your thinking of how to work through those problems on your own.
So. Okay. So you run through those experiences, and then when was it that you started your own practice? It was a couple years ago, wasn't it?
Sure. So I worked with Mr. Baker at his firm for 5 years. And then I started my practice in October of 17, of 2017. There was a few things that spurred that, but part of it was, feeling I was ready to control my own practice and my own decision-making. And then the second thing was Mr. Mitch Dugan wanted to sell his building.
Mm.
And so I remember going downtown and standing on South Main Street and looking around, and I said, well, Dan Smith owns his building,
mm-hmm.
and Victor Lugo owns his building. And I said, so I felt like with those buildings being owner-occupied, that South Main Street was on the way up. And so, my wife and I bought that building and started a law practice. And
yeah.
So, that's another one of those times where you think, okay, I'm going to start a new business and buy a building
invest in real estate at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So kind of another one of those times.
1-2 punch there.
You lay it all on the line.
Yeah.
And have faith that you're making the right decision and push forward with it. So.
And then you ended up buying the Nick's Hardware lot next to you, right?
I did.
Okay.
I did. That was a solution.
Yeah.
To an issue. And Mr. Sammy Nix and Miss Margot Nix, we were able to reach an agreement to get all that taken care of, so that was a good addition.
Yeah,
so.
Good purchases, especially in downtown Dixon, man. Right.
Sure.
Now, I mean, you can't hardly find anything that, we're getting money coming from out of town too, quite a bit, and so that's always a good sign for sure. So you started your own practice, just you and your wife. Now, what does your wife do?
My wife Crystal, she's a medical coder with HCA.
Okay. Oh wow.
So it's really good for raising a family. She works from home, so
cool.
You know, I'm out during the day, a lot of times at night too. Mm-hmm. But she's there at home, so it works out pretty well.
So was she just kind of helping you with the books and the organization of everything right off the bat?
She helped some. Yeah, she helped some in the very beginning with that, and then. You know, there was another period of time, I guess, at the end of 19 and beginning of 20 that she helped quite a bit. But,
okay.
But yes, sir.
So in your practice, what are your kind of, you know, I guess your main focuses as far as if somebody calls Leonard and says, hey, man, I need some help. You know, what would be some good situations for someone to give you a call?
Sure. So I handle mostly litigation work. And so what I mean by that is courtroom work.
Okay.
You know, the vast majority of cases are criminal defense, and that's the majority of cases that are handled in our court system. But we do a lot of, if you will, one-off litigation. If there's a some sort of problem that is unique or strange, then I've been known to take on those kind of cases as well.
Okay.
So I've done about everything you can imagine. I've done civil jury trials. I've done criminal jury trials. I've handled probates. I've handled divorces. Mm. DUIs.
Yeah.
Murders.
Yeah.
Speeding cases.
Oh, man.
I mean, so really it's kind of a little bit of everything. And that's, you know, that's I feel like important to be well-rounded and kind of familiar with all aspects of the court system.
Yeah.
So
you never know what's going to be thrown at you during a case. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of discovery to be had and a lot of mishaps along the way too, because I think in the kind of midst of any sort of trial, there's several parties involved seemingly, and you know, in the police department included as well too. So everybody's kind of got to have their T's crossed and their I's dotted, and then you're kind of the one to make sure all that, you know, nothing was falling through the cracks and everybody's, you know, saying and doing what they're actually saying and doing, right?
Sure. And you know, that's one thing that you run into if you do criminal defense work. You people say, well, how do you defend those folks, or how do you do
sure.
that? And I think you just answered that question. A defense attorney's job is to ensure that the police did their job properly and that only guilty people go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the prosecution's job to make sure that guilty people go to jail.
Yeah.
And then it's the judge's job to determine what the appropriate remedy or what the proper punishment is when it's submitted to them. And so, you know, I've looked at thousands of cases over my career and spend hours looking at those cases.
Yeah.
In the comfort of my office, without being out in the elements, or without being in a stress situation. And so officers make decisions within a split second,
mm-hmm.
in the middle of all the things going on out there on the street. And then we spend months examining that.
Mm.
And, you know, there's only a handful of cases where we've ever found any issues.
Wow.
And so, you know, a lot of folks will say, well, you're anti-law enforcement because you're a defense attorney, or you're, and I don't think that's true at all. And you've got to have a lot of respect for law enforcement that go out here and do this every day. They make the proper decision, you know, 99.99% of the time under circumstances that, you know, you and I just have to imagine.
I couldn't, yeah.
And so that's kind of in a nutshell of what we do and kind of how it fits together.
Yeah, and I think Dixon County as a whole, we've been through quite a bit over the past several years. A couple murder cases, and then Joe Clyde, and you know, all those things kind of coming to fruition all at once too. So, and I know Dixon County's got a little bit of a drug problem as well too, and I always see this as well too, and you may be able to speak on it a little bit, but. Going down 40, kind of close there to 840, there's always, it seems like two drug task force SUVs. I mean, I guess Dixon, just that 40 highway or 40 interstate's kind of a big drug trafficking area. I mean, are we seeing a lot of those, you know, issues hit Dixon? You know, maybe with some bigger drug dealers coming into town or something like that, or are we keeping pretty good control over it?
We interrupt this episode with a message from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Sassy Pop Boutique. Sassy Pop is a women's clothing and accessory boutique located inside Mulberry Mill in Dixon, Tennessee. Sassy Pop's fashion professionals help their clients find the right style and fit for all body types and sizes. Whether you are an extra, extra small or a 3XL, Sassy Pop Boutique will have you looking your best for all four seasons. Check them out on Facebook at Sassy Pop Boutique and on Instagram at Sassy Pop Boutique Dixon. Or browse their website for 24-hour shopping and shipping anywhere in the United States at sassypopboutique.com. Now let's get back to it and enjoy the rest of this episode.
I think there's drug problems nationwide.
Sure.
I mean, there are a number of things that lead to those drug problems. I think what you're seeing on the interstate or interdiction agents, that their job is to try to capture drugs or money.
Okay.
To try to cut out the financial incentive of drug dealing.
Okay.
And so those guys work the interstate. They make a lot of cases. There again, I've looked at hundreds probably of their cases. And very, 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 very seldom do you ever find any issue.
Wow.
Most everything they do is,
that's incredible,
is dead on.
The amount of training they've got to go through to make decisions like that in that split second right there. And then, you know, from the horse's mouth saying it's a lot of it's mostly pretty clean and not too terribly many mistakes are being made on that. Cool. So you've been practicing. You've had your own practice. When was it that you became the municipal court judge for White Bluff?
I was elected municipal court judge in White Bluff in August of 2014 and became judge September 1st of 2014.
Okay.
So back during that election, the White Bluff Municipal Court judge retired, which was William Hamilton. He was one of the last, if not the last, non-attorney judges in the state of Tennessee. Judge Durwood Moore retired from General mm-hmm. Sessions Court. Judge Robert Birch retired in Circuit Court. And mm-hmm. Judge George Sexton retired in Circuit Court, and Judge Michael Mize replaced Judge Andy Jackson in Juvenile Court. And
oh,
so
wow.
We all went to bed on August 31st or August 30th or 31st. I don't know how many days August has, to be honest, off the top of my head, of 2014 with a lot of judicial experience. And we all got up the next morning, Judge Larry Wallace was still in Circuit Court, and he had been there, and Judge David Wolf mm-hmm. Was elected to Circuit Court, and he had several years of experience at Dixon City Court.
Mm-hmm.
And then Judge Reese Holly was still at Dixon at that time. So, you know, all the other judges were brand new.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible right off the bat.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess, and you're running for Circuit Court right now, Circuit Court judge. So, I guess just for the listeners, for those that don't know, what's the difference between the municipal court judge and the circuit court judge?
Sure. So in Tennessee, we have the inferior courts, which are municipal courts, general sessions courts, circuit courts, which include chancery, circuit civil, probate, and criminal, or pieces and parts of that, depending on your district. But in our district, it handles all those. And then you have the Court of Criminal Appeals, or the Intermediate Appellate Courts, and the Court of Appeals, and then you have the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court's created by the Constitution, and all the inferior courts are created by the legislature.
Okay.
And there are two ways for criminal cases to be started in the state. And so you can start through a warrant. So if the police pull someone over, and, you know, they don't have a driver's license DUI is probably the best example. And their DUI, obviously the officers are going to take them into custody. They're not going to let them drive away.
Mm-hmm.
And they go see a magistrate. That magistrate reviews an affidavit, issues a warrant, and they arrest that person for DUI. when cases are started by warrant, they go to General Sessions Court. Hmm. White Bluff Municipal Court has General Sessions jurisdiction. So in White Bluff, I hear General Sessions type cases. Anything that originates in the White Bluff Municipal Police Department comes to White Bluff Municipal Court. The other way cases can be started are through direct presentment through the grand jury. So if there's an ongoing investigation and they don't want, you know, all the defendants to know that somebody's going to be, that's been caught or something like that. So like a big drug conspiracy or a case where they're not trying to get the word out about an investigation, they will go to the grand jury. They'll present their case to the grand jury. And if the grand jury believes there's probable cause, they'll issue a presentment, and then a capias will issue, which is an order from a judge to arrest someone, and then they'll go out and arrest them. Okay. Those cases will start in circuit court. And so that's how criminal cases start. Civil cases are a little bit easier. $25,000 or less,
okay,
you can file it in General Sessions Court.
Okay.
If it's more than $25,000, you have to go to Chancery or Circuit Court. And then, you know, divorces have to be filed in Chancery Court. Probate cases have to be filed in probate court. And so that's kind of the difference, if you will. So the General Sessions Courts or municipal courts handle... The municipal courts also handle any municipal ordinance violations. So anything from code violations to, you know, if your grass is too long and you won't cut it when the city asks you to, things like that. But the vast majority of what we handle are criminal cases or quasi-criminal cases.
Okay. Wow. So I'm interested in this as well, too. So obviously being an attorney is quite time consuming. What's your schedule look like as far as, you know, how much time are you committing to your, you know, your individual practice versus, you know, sitting on the bench, you know, as the judge? And is it a pretty tough schedule to work out? Or,
well, so White Bluff, when I started, I was having court once a month in White Bluff. And that would last somewhere 5 or 6 hours. And then I made some changes, and now we have court twice a month, the second and fourth Tuesdays. And so since the time I was elected, I've handled just shy of 6,000 cases. Wow. In White Bluff Municipal Court.
Wow.
And I would say at this point, probably in 4 or 5 hours a month in court. The rules of judicial conduct are very clear that if you're a judge, you're... responsibilities have to take precedence over everything. You know, there's exceptions for emergencies and whatnot, but you're required to make sure that you run the court and that you don't let anything get in the way. So if I've got some kind of issue with a case in my law practice that's scheduled on the same day, I can either try to find a judge to cover for me, or I have to move that case. It's just the rules are clear that your judicial functions must take precedence.
Okay.
And so it's a commitment that you make. In addition to that, I supervise two magistrates who are on call 24 hours a day to review any warrants or any affidavits and warrants in White Bluff. Also, you know, I'm called in occasionally to review search warrants or things of that nature. So you got to be available, but you have to be efficient, and you have to make sure that cases are moving through the system.
Yeah, I can't get them hung up. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty to do as well, too. I mean, what was it, you know, that kind of, I guess, sparked your interest to want to go on this run for circuit court? I mean, it's obviously you've seen and tried plenty of cases, seemingly. So why the move and why now?
So there's a number of questions you ask yourself about that, but I've always looked for opportunities to serve my community. And so, you know, I ran in 14 in White Bluff, and I've been serving White Bluff since then. You know, I've also helped found Friends of White Bluff, which is a nonprofit in White Bluff to help the White Bluff community. I was one of the founding board members of CASA of Dixon County to help with you know, children in foster care. And we've been able to expand that program now to serve Stewart County as well. And I've been on a number of other nonprofit boards, Habitat for Humanity. I'm currently on Developmental Services of Dixon County. So I always look for ways to serve my community. And so I started to consider running for circuit court judge. And so the first question I asked myself was, do I want to be circuit court judge? Is that the right fit?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first question. And so I look at that, you know, to be circuit court judge, there's a number of things. One, the terms are the same as White Bluff Municipal Court. So in order to run for circuit court, necessarily don't run for White Bluff.
Mm.
And so you've got to be, you know, make that decision. If you're elected to circuit court, you stop practicing law. And so that's another part of that process.
Okay.
And so, and kind of like I mentioned before, it's one of those things where you make the decision and have faith you're making the right decision. Because as I have before, you have to lay a lot on the line to do that,
mm-hmm.
to make a run. And so, you know, it's a decision that I made very serious, you know, serious consideration of. I spoke with Crystal. I spoke with other members of my family. I spoke to key supporters and stakeholders. And so, obviously at this point, we all know I answered the question yes.
Sure.
I did want to run for municipal court or circuit court judge. The second thing I asked myself is, can I make an impact on the court or improve the court? All our incumbents are running again. So, you know, I wanted to look at, can I make the court system better? If I'm running without the goal of improving the court system, then I'm not really serving our community. And so I looked at that issue and could I impact or improve the court system? And I believe I can.
Yeah.
And so that was a big part of it. You know, once I decided that I was interested in it, I wanted to make sure I was doing it for the right reasons, to improve our court system. And then the last question you ask yourself about that is, where can I make the biggest impact, the greatest impact? And so that had a lot of sub questions, you know, identifying what are the issues or where are the places that we needed improvement? What changes could be made to improve those things?
Are these all kind of logisticals, or are there some decisions maybe kind of being made that you think should have been made differently? Or, just kind of dive into, you know, what are some key things that you're seeing that when you, you know, should you get elected, you know, Leonard's going to come in and here's going to kind of be his format that he's going to operate on.
Sure. So one of the biggest things, or one of the things you hear the most when you speak to people about the court, people ask, well, why does it take so long for cases to get through the system?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking at that, wondering, you know, can we improve efficiency? In my practice, I've practiced all over the state of Tennessee. So I've handled cases in Shelby County. Mm. I've handled cases in Claiborne County and near the Cumberland Gap and all everywhere in between. And so I've been in front of a lot of different judges. And you can watch how they handle the courtroom and pick up on good habits and bad habits. You know, sometimes the bad habits are just as important as the good habits. Mm-hmm. You can see how not to do things. But one issue in our court system, when we have a trial date on the criminal docket and the civil docket as well, but more so in the criminal docket, is there will be sometimes 20 or 30 cases set on one day.
Mm.
And so you come to court at a plea date, usually in the same week, and you know, if you're not going to settle the case, you push it to trial. Well, there are criteria of how the courts pick which ones go first all the way down, you know. But if you're number 30 on that list, you don't feel this urge to make sure you're ready. I mean, you want to make sure you're ready. You don't want to not be prepared. But, You know, I'm sure there's times when you're kind of caught where you never thought 1 through 29 would move, sure. And you're third number 30's up.
Oh man, we're up.
right. And so I feel like that's a huge problem in our system, and that's what causes some of the, you know, there's nothing worse than you get to court on a trial date and then there's nothing to try. Mm-hmm. And so then that's a wasted trial date when you could have tried something else. And mm-hmm. so that's one thing I've looked at pretty hard of how we could change the scheduling of trials so that we don't miss any of those trial dates.
Okay.
Other things, you know, there's a lot of inconsistency among the judges. We have three different judges. And it would be really, really nice to, try to develop some protocols that would be the same across all three judges. And of course that takes buy-in from all three judges.
Absolutely.
But, you know, any changes in the court system take buy-in. You know, you have to have, like for criminal or docketing, you have to have buy-in from the defense bar. You have to have buy-in from the district attorney's office. You have to have buy-in from the court clerks. You have to have buy-in from the judges, the court reporters. And so, you know, leadership skills are necessary to get that buy-in. And so all those changes can only be made if everybody agrees.
Yeah, it just makes things more efficient. Like as you said, I mean, the court system is just slam-packed and backed up, you know, and then that's an unfortunate case. You know, you wish you didn't have to have that much. You know, you just kind of wish everything was ran smoothly and nobody, you know, intentionally broke the law, but it is what it is. So, you know, and Dickson County in particular is growing, you know, at a vast rate. So, you know, I'm sure the more people you get here that are living here, the more opportunity there is to see something in court as well, too.
And that answers the question you ask, why now?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are what's called weighted caseload studies that are done every year. And our weighted caseload study say we need at least one additional judge, if not two additional judges in our district.
Wow.
And so efficiency is important, you know, to try to stop the cases from backing up more. COVID-19 caused even mm-hmm. more of a backup, and you know, the courts shut down. If you would ask any attorney, you know, in February of last year, is it possible that the entire court system in the state of Tennessee would stop and close their doors? They would have told you never, mm-hmm. no way, no how. But COVID-19 did that.
Yeah.
When the Supreme Court closed the courts to in-person hearings, they asked for the courts to develop plans of how they were going to operate under those circumstances. And White Bluff Municipal Court was the first court within the 23rd District, which is our district, which includes Cheatham, Dixon, Houston, Humphreys, and Stewart counties. Mm. It was the first court in the 23rd District to submit a plan of how we're going to continue to operate. And White Bluff was only the second court in Middle Tennessee to submit a plan.
Wow.
So, you know, during that time, I spoke with the mayor because I needed her assistance to make sure how we were running the facilities. Spoke to the police chief to make sure that we had buy-in there, the district attorney's office, the public defender's office. And I submitted a plan, I believe, within about 48 hours, maybe a little bit shorter than that, of how we were going to run court in White Bluff. And so, you know, it's things like that. Whenever a decision needs to be made, you know, it needs to be made decisively, needs to be made promptly, and you need to have buy-in from all the different parts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why now. And then you talked about growth. You know, we're going to get bigger, and we can't rely on getting more help. You know, it takes a long time for things, you know, to change. You know, it takes legislative action to authorize more judges. There's a fiscal note, you know, so they have to find funding for more judges. And so, you know, we need judges who can make changes and innovations to increase efficiency to make the system work better.
Absolutely.
And so that's why now.
Wow. Yeah. And it's no better time than now either. I mean, You know, we're seeing, I mean, how old are you? Like, you're not too terribly old, are you? Right?
I'm 37.
Yeah. See, and that's, you're kind of right in the wave of, you know, I've said it on the past couple episodes as well, is that there's a lot of youth kind of stepping up into some major leadership roles, in this county, and, not necessarily wanting to, you know, flip it on its head, but, as you well see, and as you've stated, there just are some changes that are afoot, and, it's not stop them or, you know, grab them and run 100%. It's how do you control this change, efficiently? How do you make this transition of growth in a way that, you're not growing too fast, but you're also not missing opportunity as well too. So, should you be elected? I know you said you'd have to stop practicing, right? So, but you have hired another attorney. So, I mean, will your practice still kind of run with him, or, I mean, how does that look?
You have a short period of time to wind up any matters that you're personally involved in.
Okay.
And, I mean, law practices, you know, they're sold, you know, just like, you know,
okay,
medical practices or dental practices, you know, but, certainly, you know, that's one of those things kind of, again,
sure,
over the next few months, you know, I'll have to slow down the number of cases I'm taking, to make sure that I'm able to manage the law practice, the campaign,
mm-hmm,
the judgeship in White Bluff, and the other activities that I'm involved in. So.
Okay. So what's the what's the campaign trail looking like? I know it's got to be exhausting. Everybody I talk to that's running, because my cousin Stacy's running as well too for city council, and I try to keep in touch with her to make sure she hasn't gone crazy. But what's that looking like for you? What's your cadence on the campaign?
So, you know, it's there's five counties in our district, so, you know, there's a lot of ground to cover,
mm-hmm,
you know. So, you know, some days I've been, you know, visited three or four counties in a day. You know, mostly Saturdays, you can't really visit three or four in the evenings,
sure,
during the week. But, you know, you try to cover as much ground as possible. You try to talk to or speak to as many people as possible. You know, you want to make sure when you speak to people that you can clearly define why you're running, what you're doing,
yeah,
and how you hope to change things or make things better.
So are you just hosting, you know, when you go visit these counties, are you hosting luncheons, or, I mean, what does that look like?
So I look for events. I've spoken at just different events. I've gotten several invitations to speak to different groups. You know, regarding the campaign, regarding constitutional issues, regarding the legal system in general, you know, so we look for opportunities to speak, and then, you know, groups where folks may be gathered.
Okay. So. Any competition? Who's your competition this year?
So I'm running against Suzanne Lockhart Mash.
Okay.
In Division Three. So okay. We have three divisions in our circuit court. Division One is Judge David Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Division Two is Judge Larry Wallace, and Division Three is Judge Suzanne Lockhart Mash. And so okay. I'm running in Division Three. I've declared that I'm running in the Republican primary,
okay,
which will be held on May 3rd of next year.
Okay. So you've got quite the long campaign trail then.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's good. You tired yet?
Not yet. Not yet.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Yeah. It seems got a long way to go. And I guess you also just had a baby too, didn't you?
We did. We had our first child in March 2nd. And so she'll be 7 months this weekend. You know, I don't think anything's changed my life the way that that has. You know, everyone told me that it would change life. And, you know, it's one of those things that you don't realize how much it can change your life until it happens.
Sure.
You know, you get this new fire and vigor,
yeah,
for making sure that you can leave the community and the world in the best possible place,
yeah,
for the future. And you know, that was one of those things that I considered when determining to run for judge is you know, it's very important to secure our future.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, now you can kind of tie that back personally, you know, before the child, you know, before your child, that everything's not necessarily all about you or your wife. It, you know, it's obviously about everybody, as you've well stated. But now that you're going to have, you know, a child growing up in the community as well, too, you know, it just makes it that much more personal, for it, sure.
Absolutely.
100%. Cool. Well, I mean, that's, you know, you've done a great job, and I've, you know, I'll support you in however you need. And, you know, if you got anything else you kind of want to throw out there as far as let the people hear.
Well, thank you for having me, first of all, and thank you for your support. And, you know, to everybody listening, you know, I would appreciate your support in the campaign. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'm happy to discuss anything that I'm allowed to discuss. There's certain things that we're not allowed to discuss as judges or judicial candidates, mm-hmm. but anything that's permitted, I'd be happy to discuss it. You know, there are a number of issues facing our community. We've touched on a few here, but there are a number of other issues. And if you have an issue that you think needs to be addressed, you know, please bring that forward, and we'll look at it and see, you know, what we can do to help resolve it. So,
cool. If anybody wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
I guess right now would be to call my law office, 615-441-3581, or email at leonard@belmarislaw.com.
Got it. Leonard's a really good dude. I've known him for a couple of years, and you know, he obviously has some changes that he wants to make, and not that anything's too terribly wrong, but everything, you know, there's always room for improvement, you know, wherever you may be, and you know, however you may operate. So he's young, he's got a lot of energy. He may lose a little bit of it with the, you know, with the new baby, but I know a lot of us do. But he's gonna work hard, he's gonna work for the people, obviously, and I think he'd be a great selection. So reach out to him if you have any questions whatsoever, and I do appreciate you coming on. Thanks for taking the time, man. I really do.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks,
absolutely. Thank you guys for listening. Be sure to share this. You know, help him out on the campaign trail. He's going to need everything he can get, and support from the community as well, too. And once again, if you've got any other problems or any issues, just reach out to him. He'd be more than happy to help. So thank you guys again for listening. I truly appreciate it. Until next time. Peace. Thanks again to Sassy Pop Boutique for sponsoring this episode. If you are looking for the right fit and style for this upcoming season, feel free to reach out to their fashion professionals on their socials at Sassy Pop Boutique on Facebook and Sassy Pop Boutique Dixon on Instagram, or head on over to their website at sassypopboutique.com for 24-hour shopping and nationwide shipping.